91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. Welcome aboard. It's an At Your Service edition with tips about gardening, South Florida style. Good afternoon, Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Outdoor gardening is year-round in our region, but fall is the preferred season, so now's the time to make plans. Of course, we'll take questions. We have a University of Florida Broward County Extension agent on hand. He's Dr. John Pippoli, as well as the president of Florida Master Gardeners of Broward. She's Terry Goldsmith. We'll give info on growing fresh veggies, how to groom a Florida-friendly landscape, and how to safely control pests, at least the six-legged variety. That's next, Public Radio, at your service, after the news. And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock. It is today's Topical Currents, Thursday edition.
Wednesday
edition. We're off on the right foot today. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman.
Whatever you, day
usual,
it is.
As usual, correcting me.
I'm sorry, but I had to say the day.
What would I do without you?
It confuses people. Well, either way, we're at your service this hour. Our topic, South Florida gardening. Basking in the subtropics, we probably have the most bountiful plant life in the U.S.
Perhaps you have gardening questions. On hand, we have the president of Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County. She's Terry Goldsmith, and she's been gardening for some 2 decades. Welcome back, Terry. Good to see you.
It's nice to be back. Thanks.
Ready for calls.
And also in the studio is Dr. John Pippoli. He is an urban horticulture and natural resources extension agent, University of Florida Broward County Extension Education Parks and Recreation Division, which is a mouthful. Welcome to you.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here. And Terry's professor, too, by the way.
Okay, so professor, both of you are professors. Okay, so here it is, early August. This is the time to prepare for implementing fruit and vegetable gardens. And we'll talk about the how and the what. But first, I want to know the truth. How difficult is it?
It's not that hard.
No, I don't think it's hard either. I think the big thing is for people to try to do some small container gardening, for example, to do some herbs and a few easy things, some things that are vines, maybe an okra or something, and then go from there. Learn with a few and then add as you go along.
You know, anybody who's done any gardening of any kind, whether it's food plants or otherwise, if you just take a look at the plant every 48 hours or so, you can make sure it's got its water. And if you see anything on the horizon, like an aphid or two, you can blast it with water. And it's you can look again 2 days later. That's how easy it is. If you stay on top of it, you don't have to worry about these horror stories. It's when people, you know what it's like to walk away from your yard during a drought in South Florida for a
right,
week?
Right.
So it's, neglect is the chief villain.
Exactly.
Well, we want to give our number. If you, perhaps you belong to a community garden or you grow your own garden, veggies or fruits, we are at your service. Our number 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. What grows best? What do you have difficulties with? You can email radio@wlrn.org.
Well, the most popular garden veggie, I'm sure, is the tomato.
Quite right.
Give us hints on tomatoes. And now is about the time.
Yeah, I think there are three things you want to know about tomatoes. One is what's going to be the use of the tomato that you produce? Are you going to use it principally for salads or sandwiches or what?
Or pasta sauce
as well. Right. So there are a lot of things. One that's called the Everglades tomato, which is anyone can grow. You just literally can take the tomatoes that are left over, throw them in the ground, and boom, they're gone.
They literally do. They climb along like little tiny cherry tomatoes.
What do you mean you throw them in the ground?
The seeds, you can throw them on the ground and they start crawling along. It's an amazing thing.
Yeah, they're really nice.
It's wild.
They're a foolproof, set it, forget it tomato.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. Some are the little cherry tomatoes and small tomatoes that are like that are a little more difficult to grow. The bigger ones, just make sure you're going to have a place where you can support the plant as it gets bigger, and where eventually you can tie up the tomato as it starts to fill out. So larger tomatoes need to be cared for a little more.
But we read that you shouldn't plant things so close. So if you just put
circulation is important.
Okay, right. So if you just put some seeds in the ground, they're going to be close to each other.
Well,
aren't
they crawl along like a vine does. The Everglades tomato does. But you know they have those upside down or vertical garden planters now too. If you have no desire whatsoever to worry with the container or the stakes or the strings, all you have to do is get an upside down container garden and put the. It's made for tomatoes, and they'll just hang down. And the longer that they get, they just come down further to the ground.
Well, the tomato always seeks the sun. That's how they can do that inverted.
Right.
That's right. That's right. And so, but the cool part is, as long as there's air circulation, that's one of the basics. No matter what you're growing, if you've got circulation around your plants, you're eliminating a lot of the problems for disease and pests just right there.
Okay, so. Lots of people live in apartments. Can they grow tomatoes?
Yeah, that's the beautiful vertical. If it grows vertically, you
well,
can do
true.
It.
Yeah,
isn't it
true.
Nice?
Okay, so you get upside down.
It's a planter. You could make it yourself, or they actually sell them. They're called upside down planters for tomatoes.
Right.
Okay.
Just
and plant
really
it.
They're really thrifty.
They grow down instead of up.
Yeah. The only thing is, if you're on a porch that gets the afternoon south sun, mm-hmm. you may have to get a little black cloth awning kind of thing.
So they don't get fried?
Yeah, to keep them from getting totally destroyed by
what
the sun.
What about east sun?
Perfect. No problem. And
wow.
north sun is excellent, too.
Now, from firsthand experience, what about white flies?
Good gravy. How many types of white fly are there?
Yeah, there's tons of white flies. We try to tell people just take some soap, even if you want to take a bar of Ivory soap and put and rub your hands in a bucket, and so you have soapy water, and then just spray that. That'll kill most of the insects, and it's not harmful to you. It won't bother you.
Or to the pets.
Oh, totally safe. In fact, we have a printable resource at broward.org, and you can click on gardening questions for today, and you can download homemade insect repellents, insecticides.
Say that again.
Broward.org, and then click on gardening questions, and then you look for, we have PDFs there. One of them is homemade, gardening solutions that don't require poison. And that's one of them. If you follow the two-day rule, though, honestly, and you address whatever you see that day, you're never going to have a problem, I don't think, with your garden, whether it's water or pests.
Yeah, because the white flies never attack the entire plant at the same time. They
right.
always start somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And if you have to, just rip the leaf off right there. Boom.
There you go. Mechanical method works, too.
Okay, just one. Lewis wants to know the best way to get rid of orange aphids.
Water, right, if you catch them early.
Water first. Second is the soap. And if you have to, if they're really all over the place, there's some oil called neem oil.
Fantastic stuff.
Natural stuff from a neem tree that's grown all over South Florida.
How do you spell that?
N-E-E-M.
Oh, just what it sounds
yeah.
like.
Yeah, and
okay.
it's super easy, and it takes
Works.
Care of fungi at the same time. It's quite an all-purpose kind of plant.
Can you get that oil at the home center? Or?
Yeah, anywhere.
Pretty much it's available. With all the green and organic methods people are using now, neem is pretty easy to find. But the easiest way to get rid of aphids is if you see two, you take your hose, spray it with water. They don't like water. It's what happens is after a couple of days, they multiply from 10 to 1,000. And then you've got a problem. Then you've got to use neem oil.
That's why you have to check every 2 days.
Every couple of days, you save yourself a lot of time and effort with that. A lot more success, too.
Okay.
And let's go to our phones. We have lots of calls. Our number 1-800-743-9576. Email might be faster, radio@wlrn.org. First up, it's James, Deerfield Beach. Hey there.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Quick question. I have a million of them, but I try not to take up all the time. The white mold that gets on the flowers, and I have a relatively big yard, and every once in a while I get that white, the flaky, moldy stuff.
Is it powdery mildew?
Is there a way to present that?
On what kind of plant are you getting that?
Potted plants, flowers, ornamentals.
Usually what it means is you're overwatering and you have them together to the point where there's not a breeze through them, so they're wet, or you're committing the cardinal sin of watering after dark, which you should never do. Because then during the night, anything that's a spore that's around or some little critter is running up and down.
Having a splash party?
Yeah, they carry all the spores all over their body, all those little funny little skinks and things, and they'll make a mess of your plants.
Get them on those, I'm not going to. Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Thanks for calling.
All right, bye.
Okay, we have an emailer. I planted milkweed all along one side of my fence. This is Pamela as part of a butterfly garden. Despite being constantly visited by monarch butterflies, which I've observed laying eggs, I have not had any caterpillars. I noticed that there are always wasps hanging around the milkweed, and I think they're eating the eggs. Is there any plant I might be able to use to keep the wasps off?
I don't think it's the wasps eating the eggs. I bet the birds are coming by and plucking them off, because right now with our drought, food for birds is really scarce, and they love little small larvae. And you don't necessarily, you're not up early enough in the morning to see the little dicky birds, as I call them, come by and just grab the developing larvae. They love that.
So Pamela should feel good because she's feeding the birds.
Yes.
That's
yes.
Right.
It's kind of the cost of doing business sort of thing.
Okay.
And we have Danielle in Coconut Creek.
Hello.
Hi, Hello. Danielle.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Good, go ahead.
Great. Hi, I save my coffee grounds. I'm a real heavy Cuban coffee drinker, so I have a lot of coffee grounds, and I also save my eggshells. Other than having a compost bucket, what is the most efficient way to use them in my garden? Just to let you know, I'm a condo dweller, so most of my plants are in containers, although some, kind of escaped the containers and became interred, but I'm not really supposed to do that. So I just wanted to know the best way to use the resources that I have, the coffee grounds and the eggshells.
Generally, we recommend that you don't even need to use the eggshells, because it's causing a chemical reaction in the soil that you don't need, because our dirt here is very alkaline.
Alkaline, right.
And so
what
that
if it's
just,
commercial potting soil?
Do you really need that in commercial potting soil?
No, the whole story here is, remember, the alkalinity of our water is above 8. The measurement of acidity of soil should be 5.5 to 6.5, that's your target range where they most efficiently use all the nutrients. So the very fact that you water with city water, you're throwing the soil toward alkalinity. So if you add eggshells, it compounds the problem.
But the other side of it is coffee grounds are great,
Coffee grounds are fantastic.
Acid-loving. And everything's acid-loving in our vegetable garden, isn't it?
We live in a war to bring our pH, our acidity, the number down, so that it increases the acidity and decreases the alkalinity. So the deal is, the more coffee grounds you can get, the better.
Can't really overdo it.
Danielle, you're in luck.
Drink more coffee.
Yes.
Oh, also, to the gentleman that just called about the white fly and the neem, I actually had not an orchid, but the white flowers, the beautiful, smelly, wonderful flowers, gardenia, thank you, that almost died because of the infestation. And I did use the neem product. I used the commercial, even though I have a neem plant also. But I used it faithfully, like every day, and it was still really gunky looking. What I did is that I waited until I saw that it was through trying to flower. I cut it way back, almost like to the sticks, and then I just sent it a lot of really good vibrations, and I'm just really happy to say that now the foliage is super beautiful, emerald glossy green. And it looks like it's coming back, and I'm looking forward to getting flowers for my gardenia plant again.
Okay. Well, use those coffee grounds and keep using the neem as a preventative, because that'll solve your problems.
Use it as a preventative. Like what? Like once a week or once a month? Or?
Well, I mean, in between rains. You know, as long as you think it needs a coating on there, it's a great preventative. It's a lot easier to prevent than it is to solve a problem.
We're talking about South Florida Gardens with Dr. Terry Goldsmith, president of the Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County, and Dr. John Pipoli, who is
everything.
A lot of things.
All things.
It's too confusing.
You can just say I'm the Master Gardener
the master naturalist.
Master
Yeah, okay, Master Gardener and Master Naturalist. We'll be right back.
And today's Topical Currents at Your Service. We're talking about gardening with Dr. John Pipoli and also Professor Terry Goldsmith. And we're taking calls, of course. Our number, 1-800-743-9576. Email radio at WLRN.org. Radio at WLRN.org. Sean in Miami, hey there.
Hey, I was wondering about cultivating edible mushrooms outside in South Florida, like using spore plugs, and what species of mushrooms should I try out?
That's one for you, John.
Yeah, we don't have a whole lot of expertise in that. There's an organization that deals with growing mushrooms, and I think the best thing to do is to Google it and figure it out from there, because for the basics for fungi is that it's a dark place, that you have the right type of manure to grow on them, and that it's been pasteurized, and there's several other things that are really key to make sure you don't get any toxic mold in your cultivation of the mushroom. So best that you consult that.
All right, okay. Paul, looking at that up.
Thank All right, I'm on. Sorry. It's just not no something we get enough
okay,
to
thanks,
know about.
Okay, thanks,
Sean. All right.
Thank you.
Okay, Joe needs help. Squirrels are eating his tomatoes. He's been growing them for over 20 years on and off, never had the problem.
Oh, how interesting. We know, I did see a solution that I thought was very cool, and it's a way to recycle your little clear plastic containers that you get from the supermarket. I put the clear plastic container over the larger tomatoes and close it. They can't get in. So once the fruit, unless they're eating it when they're very tiny.
So you put a slit in it.
Yeah, or you can just close, it's a clamshell, and you close it over the fruit, and they won't bother it. And I think you can also, can't you use fabrics, John? Aren't there
You can use fabrics. My neighbor was ingenious. He made a little house to put over it, a screen, little four screens together.
So you still get the sun.
Four 1x1s.
And then
four small 1x1s, and it's like a box, but made of the cheap black screening that you use for your back porch, and it's taller than the plant. He made four of them 6 feet tall and 3 feet wide, and when the plants are up and get the tomatoes, boom, he pops them over. But it's because the number of iguanas where he is and Cuban animals, they eat everything.
And what?
The Cuban animals, they're those green things that look like iguanas.
Oh, okay.
They eat everything, and they can't get in there.
There is one other thing. You can provide a food source for the squirrels.
That's
I have a squirrel feeder, and it works like a charm.
Like what about peanuts?
Just keep it full.
Nuts?
Yeah, peanuts. Yeah. Unsalted nuts. Throw them out there. They won't bother your tomatoes anymore.
That's right. There you go. It's peanuts for the squirrels.
That's it. Yeah. Celebrate.
And next up we have Tony in Miami. Go ahead, Tony.
Hi, yes. My question is regarding what I believe to be pickle worms. I've tried growing cucumbers with no success several times, and as I've researched, I found out it seems to be that it's a pickle worm, and I understand they may be coming from from a fly that's only prevalent during a certain cycle or time of day, and I'm just trying to find out what can be done about the pickle worms.
Mechanical, John?
Mechanical, pulling them off. The other thing you can do is write to mastergardener@broward.org, and we'll give you the link to the publication from the University of Florida that deals with pickle worms.
And he should include a cell phone photo, you know, just to make sure that it is what you think it is. We can tell you. We can identify the bug, too, before recommending a protocol.
So they only dine on cucumbers?
They're on several. There's several different kinds, and there's one that's particular to the cucumber family. So they affect all the melons, basically.
What'd you want to say, Tony?
No, I was just going to say. I mean, it's. Are you familiar with any other worms that may be a problem other than a pickle worm?
There's a lot of worms.
It's certainly a worm.
There's
always on, as you said, melons. It's always on the watermelon or cucumber.
There are three different ones that are on melons a lot, and the best way is to send the picture in. Then the master gardener that answers the email for you will give you either the hyperlink or attach a PDF of the article that will tell you in very simple English what you have to do. And it'll give you normally a biological choice, a physical choice, and a chemical choice. So you can decide how you want to deal with it.
All right. Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks.
Okay. Next up, it's Vivian in Miami. Vivian.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Hi. Go ahead.
So I'm calling today to get help with a problem of crabgrass infestation in my lawn.
Turf.
Yeah, it's
we hate turf, the master gardeners, because you spend your whole life just trying to keep it where it looks like one way. And are you from some other part of the country besides Miami originally?
No.
Most of us northerners come down here and we think we can keep that pristine lawn, and it never seems to
not
work out.
Happen.
So
you know, I'm in my late 50s and I have never encountered this.
Are you sure it's crabgrass? Who told you it was a crabgrass infestation?
Yeah, it is. I'm definitely.
Okay, well, here's the first step is to raise the deck on the lawnmower to 4 inches, because the rest of your lawn is probably St. Augustine, right?
I believe it is, yes.
Okay, well, the first step is to keep that at 4 inches. The second step is cut back on the watering a little bit.
And don't really water.
Okay, well, then what you're going to have to do is pull them out physically, and then if you want to look for a chemical solution, there are chemical solutions available, and that would be email the master gardener at broward.org, and they'll give you the link to the exact directions, because there are over 9,700 articles written about how to deal with problems in Florida lawns and gardens, and that's all prepared. Crabgrass, you know, you either pull it out by hand or you use a chemical to kill certain types of grasses along with the crabgrass, but it won't affect the St. Augustine. But just number one is raising the deck on the lawnmower to 4 inches, because see, that shades it out. Remember, a St. Augustine plant is wider at the top than at the bottom, so the taller the lawn, the darker it is on the surface of the ground, and the cooler it is. And crabgrass doesn't like that, so it will not do well.
Oh, good. Okay.
Awesome.
You have an emailer?
Emails. We have lots of them. We have a lime tree in our backyard, full sun, not doing well, no leaves on the branches. We pruned it, still not coming back. Anything we can do?
The fact in Florida is everyone has to live with 10 years maximum an average for a given citrus tree.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know how old it is, but it sounds like it's probably an older tree, or it might even have, I mean, if it's got no
greening
leaves on it,
or canker or both. It's not if you get it, it's when you get it, because it's going to happen. So what you have to do.
So it only produces 10 years.
Well, what happens is by 10 years, everybody's trees are so contaminated they have to get rid of
them. It's just time to replace it.
So here we have to live by rotating. So the first step is to always turn your lemon or lime tree into a shrub. So you're not subject to the tree management rules, and you can manage it like a shrub, and the fruit is easy to get, and it's much safer to deal with.
So you keep trimming it.
You keep trimming it, exactly.
And control
in the right time of the year, so you don't trim off where it was going to have flowers, right? And then then what you do is, as it gets older, once it gets to about year 7 or 8, you're going to see some leaves are a little yellow in the middle, and they're starting to crinkle, and you'll get this, and you'll get that, and you'll say, well, I have the inevitable canker.
So could you plant a line of those and trim them like hedges and have them producing fruit?
Sure, yeah. The only thing is, remember, when you have the more plants you have of the same species, you're creating a sink, a resource. You know, so you might be sort of inviting all the pests in the neighborhood to your backyard. But
well, it isn't just that. Like when one gets something, they all get it. And then you've got this big spot in your yard because you had a monoculture. So what are you going
to
do?
The other thing to do is have one. Don't plant your yard full. Have one. And when it gets to year 7, plant another one.
Good. That's a good advice.
Then when that one gets to year 9, plant another one and get the first one.
That's what I should have done.
And that's how they do it in Brazil. The fields of oranges in Brazil actually march from one side to the other, because they're constantly eliminating rows and adding new rows.
And why do they eliminate them? Because they get something?
Yeah, they have canker and they have greening, so the fruit is not usable.
Huh.
That's what happens.
Okay.
So we're stuck with it. It's worldwide. It's like the chocolate diseases. They're all worldwide now.
And next up, on that note,
too bad.
Sorry,
Ricardo in Miramar.
Hi, Ricardo. Good afternoon.
Hi, Ricardo.
Hi, good afternoon.
Go ahead, Eddie.
Yeah, I have some plum tomatoes that I planted sometime in February. They've been blooming for like the past 2 months, but the blossoms do not yield any fruit. They dry up after they bloom.
Too hot. It's too hot, probably, wouldn't you say? It's summer.
Well, he has a bee crisis. There's something that's driving the bees away from his place. So if he's not getting if the flowers aren't being pollinated, the easiest way to better that situation is to plant a couple of sunflowers in your yard, because sunflowers are sort of like beacons to bees. They have nectar, they have pollen, and in the mornings it's full of dew. So the dew and the nectar, it's like a one-stop smorgasbord for the bees.
And they're beautiful. Yes. They grow all year long.
And you'll find that your plants will get pollinated better, because those are definitely, tomatoes are bee flowers. They're buzz pollinated.
Is there a way to do it yourself?
Well,
Yeah, it's very. You'd have to have several different plants because they can't be pollinated by flowers from the same plant. They're self incompatible.
And the bees know.
So what I would do is try to increase the number of bees you have, and then your whole yard will be better.
How do you do that?
By planting the sunflowers.
Flowers. Oh, okay.
Because the sunflowers will say, "Here I am, come and eat."
Well, that's like the Uber bee plant.
Yes.
Okay. Next. Go ahead.
Hello? Yeah, unfortunately, I live in a condo, so I don't think I'm going to be able to, because these are on my porch, so I don't think I'll be able to foster sunflower plants.
Well, you know, there's that just happens to be the magnet for bees. There's lots of plants that flower that bees go to with nectar. Any flowering plant, like a nasturtium, which you can also eat.
Right.
Marigolds, they go to anything that they can pollinate, and when you bring the bees to your tomatoes, they make more tomatoes.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right.
Next emailer.
Andrea wants to know about non-toxic, animal-friendly bug repellents for in the house, which is a great question. In the house.
Would neem work in the house?
Yeah, but it's better, if you're talking about repellents, a citronella candle is absolutely the best. Citronella is an extract from the fruit of the citronella tree, which
grows.
So
you can spray
No, you just light the candle.
But if you don't want, that's a flame situation.
Yeah.
So what do you do when you're not home to light a candle?
Oh. There are things that you can hang that have citronella in them and that'll give it off during the day. And that's I don't know what the propellant is for.
I know that I've been at parties and stuff with I am like flypaper for mosquitoes.
Me too.
No matter how much citronella there is, it doesn't keep away the mosquitoes from me. So there must be, is there any?
Eucalyptus oil is what's in the modern non-toxic insect repellents for your hands.
Okay.
The more eucalyptus odor that's in the air, the more it'll help you.
So could she use that for a bug repellent?
Sure.
Eucalyptus?
Yeah.
Oil?
Yeah, because there's an
citronella oil, too, on yourself.
Yeah, but on yourself, is the eucalyptus oil bug repellents are absolutely fabulous.
Oh, okay.
And they're not astringent or anything. They won't inflame any cut. I use it all the time outside, and I'm in really yucky woods all the time, so.
Okay.
It's fine.
All right, Andrea, so try that.
Eucalyptus oil.
And next, a Miami caller, George or Jorge, one or the other.
Yes, Jorge, that's fine.
Okay, siga.
Okay, my question is about my main tree. I planted that tree like 2 years ago. You already have two deers on the road. I got the small fruit that grows maybe like 1 inch, maybe like 3/4 inch. But then most of the fruit that fall down. I don't know if that could be due to lack of water or too much water or due to that I have to use more fertilizer on that tree. I would like to know what could be the reason for those fruit to fall down.
Well, not being able to see what the fruit looks like, because there's always extenuating circumstances. It could be too much water. Is it in a sunny location?
Yeah, it's in a sunny location. It gets sun all day long. It gets sun all day long.
Does the fruit just look like it's not mature, or does it have other marks on it or anything that might indicate that there's something else going on?
No, the fruit looks really good. What happened is that when we get kind of windy weather, they just start falling down. That's it. They just don't grow no more. It's like they don't stick to the tree.
There's a good chance that you might have a potassium deficiency, which can be caused by two different things. One is using a lawn fertilizer on it, which is high in nitrogen, and that will induce a potassium deficiency. The way to cure that is to add 0050 fertilizer. That means pure potash. But just
0050, you said.
Right. Now, just to make things easy. There is now a specialized tropical fruit extension agent at the Miami-Dade Extension Service, and his name is Jeff. Last name is Wazlewski. Don't ask me to spell it, but he is really knowledgeable. He is absolutely fruit crazy and has all the science, so he can help you.
Okay,
that's all he does. But it sounds to me that usually when mature fruits fall, it's a potassium deficiency.
Okay, that's a good idea. Now, last question, very quick. Also, I have some hibiscus on my backyard, and from time to time, I see that the leaf and the flowers, they get like kind of like shrinking. somehow. I don't know if that's due to an insect or to a pest.
That happens this time every single year. My entire yard's covered with hibiscus, and this is when I have to start spraying the heck out of them with neem oil to stop that from happening. And the best way to do it is proactively. You do it before you see a problem. Just when June comes, start spraying your hibiscus with neem oil, you're covered.
Right. Okay, great. I just want to take a moment. We're going to get to more of your calls and emails to say the community service events. Tell us about this, Terry, community service events in Broward with Master Gardeners and WLRN volunteers.
Yes, we're going to have our first cooperative volunteer event. As you know, the Master Gardeners are a 100% volunteer army of volunteers, I should say, all trained by Dr. Piepoli. And we hooked up with your volunteer staff, and we're going to be working on a butterfly garden rejuvenation at the VA clinic, the Bill Kling VA clinic in Sunrise on Commercial Boulevard, together in September 12th. And we're going to go in there, we're going to bring in some more plants, bring in some mulch, and work together on putting that. It's something that the veterans use as a horticultural therapy and also for training on growing their own vegetables.
That's great for PTSD.
Yes, very effective.
So where can they find out? It's September 12th and it's in Sunrise. Where do they get the information?
Well, they can get the information either at the Master Gardener calendar, or actually we're going to be supplying a link to also with the WLRN. We'll be getting information from us. Well, they'll be sending it on, I believe they'll be putting it on your website and promoting
it. Okay, great.
September 12th.
Okay, yes.
And one quick thing is, all of you that might be listening that are veterans, you have the opportunity to participate in this program that uses horticultural therapy to help you with your PTSD or the effects of Agent Orange to help you focus. It's a really, really successful program. All you have to do is go to report to your local VA. Ask your counselor to enroll you in the program. It is free.
The name of the program is?
The name of the program is Gardening. That's all it is. Gardening for Veterans.
You know,
and it's at the Bill Kling Clinic.
And if you forget, just write into mastergardener@broward.org and ask us, when's the VA, the WLRN Master Gardener volunteer project taking place? And I can tell you, they're using this as a template for others. If this works, and it's working very well so far, I met with Dr. Greenberg yesterday, and they're very, very happy with, he runs that clinic. We hope that it'll serve as a model for other clinics in South Florida and around the country.
Veterans clinics,
correct.
That's wonderful.
It's the third Wednesday of every month for 2 hours for the veteran that's attending the class. And through their counselors, that's how they register, because it's treatment.
Right. And they not only can they come themselves, it's veterans only, but they're caregivers as well, or a family member, because a lot of times they come together.
Okay, great.
And we'll go back to the phones. Next up, Abdul in Miami Garden, something's bugging him.
Cool.
Yeah. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi. Go ahead. Hi.
I have a plant called the Naked Lady, and it blooms a beautiful red bloom on top of beautiful red flower. And I'm having issues with bugs, and I think it's an aphid, but then when I sprayed the neem oil on it, it burnt the leaves. I don't know what to do.
Well, the first thing is, Naked Lady is a common name, so we're not sure what you think a Naked Lady is versus what our books might say. It's funny because there's different names for flowers, and lots of them are common names. The best thing to do would be to email us a cell phone picture of that, maybe a couple of them. And I would think, John, if the leaves are burning, are you spraying it during the day?
Yeah, I'm spraying it like in the morning.
Well, it acts as a magnifying glass, right? When you put a bug under a magnifying glass, when the sun's out, guess what happens? Fries. Mm. So you really should do the neem oil later in the day when it's in the shade and it has a chance to do its job.
But not night.
Not nighttime, no.
No.
Never at night.
The sun is going down.
Though. Yeah, late afternoon.
See, if you do it in the direct sunlight, then you just elevate the leaf temperature. You almost quadruple it. Mm. And it just fries everything like turd.
So, Abdul, send your pictures of your Naked Lady to mastergardener@broward.org.
We'll do that.
We're all intrigued to know what it looks like, so please send it right away.
Beautiful red bloom.
Don't worry, everyone's an adult.
Okay, two questions from Irene. Best time to prune a mango tree and what to use as a fertilizer?
Easy. You prune the mango tree when it has finished fruiting completely, hopefully within 2 weeks after it's finished fruiting, so that you don't destroy any new coming buds. Remember, after the mango has fruited, it's going to have a leaf flush after about 2 to 3 weeks. So you want to prune where you're going to prune, so the rest of it will flush the leaves.
Okay.
And those flushing leaves are feeding the areas that are called meristems that will be flowers the next year and the following year. That's why if we get hit with a hurricane in the end of October, we lose 2 years mango crop.
Did you just say that?
Yes.
Oh, no, you didn't say that. You didn't say that. Mean that.
Okay.
So anyway, and then as far as fertilizer, 0050. That is proven beyond a shadow of a doubt to be the ideal combination.
You said that's pure potash?
Pure potash. It's fabulous.
Okay, and she just wants to know the tastiest cherry tomatoes.
And you can blame the storm on Pipoli.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Yes. Unfortunately, they don't do them by last names. It's first names.
And they're women usually, aren't
and
they?
Well, I think they alternate.
No, they stop now.
Yeah, we have a tropical storm Danny now.
Oh, that's right. We do. I forgot. Yeah. They changed that rule.
Okay, next caller, Chester in Oakland Park.
Good afternoon, Dr. John.
Hey, how you
doing? Terry.
Hey.
Hope all is well. Listen, quick question. I'm going to be putting down some tomatoes, and I hope to get it in the ground around the first week of October. What would you recommend as the best variety to use just for simple making sandwiches and salads?
So that's like a beefsteak tomato, really.
Yeah, all of the ones that are in the beefsteak families are absolutely suited for planting in October. So you've chosen the exact right time to do it.
Ideally, though, honestly, for salads, I think the cherry tomatoes are the best.
And which cherry tomato? We forgot to answer, Irene.
There's hundreds of them.
So many. Yeah, they're all good.
Yeah, you can go right. The Master Gardener will send you to the page that has this list ad nauseum with pictures of each one, and you look
and more details about a cherry tomato than you could ever possibly want to know.
There's easily 40 cherry tomatoes.
They're all
It's complicated. Yeah.
Okay. And
guys, I really appreciate what you all are doing. Keep the good work up.
Thanks. All right. Thank you very much, Chester.
Okay.
Jacqueline has an avocado tree, 12 feet tall. Tiny black bugs under the leaves make a brown spot on the front of the leaves. What are they? How do I get rid of them?
Well, the bugs aren't really related to the spot. The spot is anthracnose, which is a fungal thing, and you have to get rid of that by applying liquid copper.
The liquid copper.
You can buy it at any store. It comes in a little gray container, and it's like a teaspoon to a gallon, but follow the directions on the label.
Okay.
And as far as the little black bugs, they're coming there to prey on scales, which are probably very small and translucent, and you probably can't see them. So take a little magnifying glass and look. A lot of that is caused because too much water is being used in the area.
That's why you get scale?
It makes it easy for the scale to penetrate, because when it's nice and dry,
they don't like it.
Well, the wax on the leaf is hard.
Right.
See, the more water you put on it, the fungus starts to break down the waxes, and then these things can get on there.
And if you're ever not sure, you just send a picture of the pest. You take your cell phone photo and send it to mastergardener@borrow.org. We're always there.
Okay, Dr. John Pipoli, I'll get it right.
That's
and
fine.
Terry Goldsmith, president of the Florida Masters Gardeners of Broward County. A short break, and we'll be back with more of your questions. Well, we'll just keep talking. It's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, John Pipoli, and got it right finally. Yay. And Terry Goldsmith, and both Master Gardeners. Dr. John Pipoli is the Urban Horticulture and Natural Resources Extension Agent with University of Florida in Broward County. And Terry Goldsmith is the President of the Florida Master Gardeners of Broward County. And we're taking your calls and emails. Nancy's looking for several different plant varieties that are prodigious flowering plants that will flower throughout the year.
Well, that's not too
hard. You want a perennial, right?
Perennial, it depends on also what size plant I guess you want. For example, I have a beautiful Jatropha in my backyard that flowers all year long. It depends also on if you're looking for fragrance or not. For example, like the Pentas flower all year long, and they even reseed themselves. In my yard, I don't even have to worry about getting new ones. The old ones reseed themselves. And gardenias, for example, they bloom throughout the year, just not every day. Right. So if they're in a sunny spot and you keep putting those coffee grounds on the ground, you get gardenias.
What other cool stuff? You have little things, like you can have tropical sage, which is a little small plant in the mint family that has red flowers and little small leaves, and it reseeds itself. All you have to do is wiggle the plant, and the fruits that are open will throw their seeds. So you plant in a 50-foot area, you plant six plants to begin with, and by the end of the year, you have a whole line of them. And also, if you want little shrubs, some of the little small flowering shrubs are really attractive.
You know, that's a good idea, because I have that, is it Thryellis, in my front yard. Lovely little yellow blooms, constantly blooming. I cut it back, it keeps blooming. It's beautiful yellow flowers all year long.
Yeah, there are a number of little small shrubs. If you go to Broward.org and you look for extension, E-X-T-E-N-S-I-O-N, when you get to our first page, you can click on our recommendations, Florida-friendly shrubs for perimeter planting. So what that means is you can basically do anything with those plants. You can put them in a hedge. You can have them by themselves. And it's arranged by height. And we have everything from little border plants that are only half a foot to privacy screens that are 25 feet tall.
Okay.
So it's sort of a, and they're all easy to manage. You can find that we tell you the right plant, the right place to put that right plant in the right place, so that it's easy to manage.
Do any of those go indoors?
We work with indoor plants.
The thing is, they don't flower indoor the way they do outdoor because of the full sun. But you know, another thing that I discovered as an ex-Midwesterner is the heirloom roses down here.
Oh yeah,
flower all year. Everybody told me what a nightmare it was to grow roses down here, but it's not if you get an heirloom Florida rose.
Right.
And they flower all year long.
Great.
Back to our calls. This is Peter in Marathon. Hi.
Help! Help!
We never hear that.
The land crabs are turning my yard into Swiss cheese.
Wow. What is it?
Land crabs. The ones that are kind of purple with orange.
Yeah. Well, they're only going to be doing that once a year, right? When they have their migration.
No, all year long.
What
all
the
year
heck?
Long. And it's just got worse and worse.
I feel like click and clack.
I think,
what the heck?
It has to be that there's something going on where there would normally be at the margin of the shoreline in the mangroves that's forcing them up to where you are. Do you have mangroves around your house?
No, there are no mangroves around my house. I live on right by the ocean. I'm on a canal. It's a cap rock. And these guys don't go in the water. They don't swim in the water. I think they reproduce, in the water. They lay their eggs.
They're on the little hammocks in the mangroves, is what.
Yeah,
in the mud.
They're not the little tiny guys. They're not the giant, white ghost crabs either.
Jeez.
Medium size, 3-4 inches across, something like that.
I think your smartest thing is going to be to get a hold of the Monroe County Extension, because if it's happening in your yard, it's probably happening to a number of people, and they have a Kim. Kim Gable, G-A-B-E-L, is the...
I know Kim. Nobody's been able to help with this yet.
Yeah, if she hasn't been able to help you, she'll put you in touch with the natural resources person. There's at Penny Camp Park, there's a really knowledgeable natural resources person that deals with the wildlife at the interface between marine and land. So that would be the person to help you.
Yeah, I kind of feel like Bill Murray on the golf course.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Listen, if you don't get anywhere with any of those recommendations, just send us an email. We'll help you out. We'll try to help you find a solution.
Okay.
But thanks for calling.
Try the naturalist at Penny Camp. That'd be a big help for you.
And another caller. This is James. Couldn't you make some crab salad? James of Fort Lauderdale.
Ryan,
Go ahead, James.
Okay.
James. Yes, it is. James in Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, yes. I have a mango tree in my backyard that has termites in it. I was wondering if there's some kind of a treatment that I can do to get rid of them, or if I'm going to lose the tree.
I don't know if they're really termites or not. I've only seen termites in one mango tree before, and they were wet wood termites, not dry wood.
That's what
termites.
They are.
Oh, if that's what they are, then write to the Master Gardener at Broward.org, and there's a specific publication that tells you how to deal with it, because it's complicated. You have to cut off the part of the tree that's infested, And then there's a little treatment that you do with some non-toxic natural chemicals. What they do is they invade areas that weren't pruned properly, that get invaded by fungus, and they're really there to eat the fungus and not to eat the live wood. They only eat the dead stuff and the fungus.
Trimmed back for power lines, so that probably wasn't done well.
Yeah, they might have left. Either did a flush cut or the tree had another problem. So get mastergardener@barr.org because we just solved that problem for two people in Fort Lauderdale in the last month.
And they saved the trees.
Yeah, okay. It was no problem. They just had to do a little work on them. That's all.
All right, super. Thank you.
Sure.
Laz lives. He's saying between Naples and Miami, which is better for growing what? Just briefly.
Vegetables?
I guess fruits and vegetables.
Fruits and vegetables. I mean, there's just like an endless possibility. Depends on what the microclimate you have is.
Okay.
The difference between the West Coast and the East Coast is there are not regular prevailing winds all the time in the West Coast. The air is still a lot more. That means your problems
more
with
diseases.
Fungi much higher. So over there, in the morning, when plants are wet, do not walk around touching them because you'll spread disease everywhere.
So, in other words, it's better. Miami is better for
easier vegetable growth. It's easier.
Okay.
Easier.
Yeah. So there you go. Easier. There you go, Laz.
And next up, whoops, he just took off. Line six, Tommy in Boynton Beach. Hi.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Yes, my problem is my papaya tree, which when we first planted it and it started giving fruit, was gorgeous. It was giving great fruit and everything. And then about a year later, these black wasp-like things started gathering around the fruit and stinging it and laying their eggs in it, I think. And like we would open a papaya and it would have a bunch of like white little maggots inside of it.
So this is the same plant that you've been using for a series of seasons to cultivate?
Yeah, it was good for the first couple of years, and then just recently, you know, these I think it's the wasps that are stinging it with their eggs. I don't know.
It's a fly.
We see some wasps on it every once in a while.
Well, I can tell you that my experience, and John, you let me know if you have a different one, is that with the papaya trees, once they're over a year old, I cut them down and start a new one because I have not had any. They always seem to have the same problem some of the other plants do. They grow so fast.
Yeah. Is yours a Mexican one, the one with the big fruit or the one with the little fruit?
They're pretty big.
Okay, then the Mexican ones.
He's about 20 feet tall now.
Yeah, here's what happens with the Mexican ones. If there are a lot of, there's several different flies that visit those, and there's the ones that put the eggs in that produce the maggots. So the best advice is to, as soon as they're anywhere close to the size you want them, take them off and ripen them in the house, you know, in a bag, because the problem with those is they're so large, you can never get the fruit to mature all the way throughout its whole length in a uniform way. So one end's rotten and the other one's still green.
Yeah, that happens too.
So there is a Hawaiian type, which is a quarter of the size, and that has their self fertile.
They
have bisexual flowers,
too?
And they grow fast.
Very fast.
And they're just a lot more compact. So if you go to your local nursery and ask for a Hawaiian papaya, you'll be better off. Because the flies must be in your neighborhood visiting other things. So that's going to be, otherwise you're going to be fighting the flies all the time.
Okay.
So I should just cut that tree down?
Yeah, get rid of it and get a Hawaiian one.
A couple of months.
Yeah, get a Hawaiian one.
Should I use the seeds? Well, I'll have the same kind of tree.
Yeah, you have the same kind of tree. So go and get a Hawaiian one.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
Okay, and Claire, as our last question,
sure.
This is about plants, not animals, but she wants to make sure that the cat poop in her community is not affecting her veggies.
No, I would say as long as you're not using it as manure.
Right.
All right, there you go, Claire. You're okay. All right, so, well, we want to thank...
The contact numbers and
yes,
all that.
Go ahead. Contact numbers, email...
It's mastergardener@brower.org.
Yes, and there is a number. If you don't have a computer, you can call 954-357-5121 and leave a message. Just so you know, the message turns into an email. So all of our master gardeners, even the ones that work from home and do webmail can answer that.
Well, not only that, like we were talking about earlier with the naked lady, if we don't know, common names can be a lot of different things. Just go ahead and send us pictures.
Okay, so mastergardener@broward.org, and again, the Gardens for Veterans.
Right.
Okay, thanks so much, Dr. John Pipoli.
Yay!
Yay!
Right. Holy moly, John Pipoli.
And Terry Goldsmith of Florida Master Gardeners of Broward. Thanks.
And thanks for tuning in. Apologies to those callers we couldn't get to. Today's producer, Richard Ive. Technical direction by online producer, Paul Leary. And free audio archives and downloads at our website, WLRN.org. More information at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow, we begin with discussion of long-term services, healthcare services for the elderly. Also, Linda Gastenheimer's Food and Dining looks at public school lunches in both Miami-Dade and Broward counties. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.